Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by Core Sports, the very best in women's activewear. Head sweats, function smart with our buddy Gino Cinco, the best physical therapist around. And Babbittville Radio can check out all of our interviews on iTunes. Our next guest, the founder, creator, Mr. Wildflower himself, Terry Davis, joins us from his palatial estate hidden somewhere up in Central California. Terry, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Bob?
I am wonderful. Well, we're, a little more than a month away, month and a half away from the greatest half-distance event on the planet, and what do you call it? Woodstock? The Woodstock?
Woodstock of Triathlon.
Woodstock of Triathlon. Thousands of people coming up there to Lake San Antonio, and swimming, biking, and running, and have the best time ever. And more importantly, because it's you've got music going all weekend. You've got a playground for the kids. It's like the ultimate family getaway.
Yeah, I think it's really great. You know, this is our 33rd year, and ever since the beginning, it's sort of been sort of a great place. And you know, the courses are incredible. And you know, we have to thank God for those, because He made the terrains and the hills and the roads and, you know, the lake, and we just get to use it. And you know, it's sort of out in the middle of nowhere, but it's the greatest place for triathlon, because it gets you back to where you started in the sport.
Exactly. What I love about it too, when you're walking up the stairway of fame, and you're looking at names like Paul Newby Frazier and Paul Huddle and Cameron Whitehoff and Jesse Thomas and Scott Tinley, and all the legends have raced there over the years.
Yeah.
When you look back, I mean, this is one of those events that's really bridged the gap between, you know, the Big Four, with Tinley and those type of guys, to the current era with Jesse Thomas and folks like that. It's
Heather Jackson,
you've seen it all.
Jesse and Barb Lindquist, and you know, there's just been so many that have come and have their name on that Stairway of Champions. It was, I hate to say, but it's probably one of the coolest things we ever did.
No question.
Because the Stairway of Champions, because basically what we used to have is we had a rope tied to a pole
and
forever, you know. And so you'd grab hold of the rope and climb up and down the hill, you know. And so, you know, I talked to the parks and I said, you know, we need to put a stairway in here, you know, so let's put a stairway. And so they said, yeah. And I was going to, you know, at the top of the stairway, put a wall and put all the names on the wall. And then it was like, no, this is the Stairway of Champions. And we put the plaques with all the names of the champions on it, and it was incredible. And then, like, I think it was a couple years ago, the 30th, when we had the 30th, we had all these people that had won the race before, and we got to take a picture with all those champions, you know, from Dean Harper to Julie Moss to Paula to, you know, Paul Huddle to Tinley to, you know, everybody was there, you know. It was really incredible. And now when I go down there, and that's one of the things I do, is look up at the stairs, and, you know, and it's functional too, because people climb up and down the stairs all day long.
Without a rope.
And
without,
really great.
And without falling down.
Yeah.
Yep. I love that. So when you look back at your 33 years of this event, a couple moments that stick out the most to you.
I think, well, obviously the first one.
Yeah.
You know, because the first one was, it was a comedy of errors, you know, because I had just got my job with the parks department, and, you know, one of the things that they focused me on was, you know, trying to increase the visitorship to Lake San Antonio in the spring before the season started. And so, you know, we were going to put together a wildflower festival, and with bluegrass music and arts and crafts and all this other stuff. And it ended up that Sally Edwards had been to Ironman that year, and one of her Fleet Feet stores was in Salinas, and so the owner of the Fleet Feet store was going to help us put on a 10K run, and he had just finished talking to Sally, and, you know, he comes running up to me and says, "Terry, we got to do this thing. We need to add an event. It's called Triathlon." And I says, "That sounds great. That's wonderful. What is it?" He says, "It's swimming, biking, and running." And Sally just came back from Hawaii, and it was the most incredible thing. And so I says, "Well, we have a lake so we can swim. You know, we've got roads so we can bike, and we've got trails so we can run. So let's go ahead and do it, you know." So we did it that first year, and it absolutely poured down rain. It was the wettest year we've ever had. And, you know, the guy shows up with like 6 or 7 volunteers to do a 100K triathlon. And, you know, we had put chalk on the run courses, and so the chalk, you know, all, you know, came off. And
yeah.
So, and there was no wetsuits then. So they come out of the water, and, you know, it was cold. And I think we had 86 people in the event, and 25 or 30 of them had hypothermia coming out of the water because we didn't have wetsuits.
Right.
Yet. They weren't even invented. And then the bike was the same way. It was, you know, out there in the rain, and they come back on the bike, and we put more of them in the, you know, had more hypothermia. And luckily, the manager of the store who lived down there had one of these things called a hot tub in his backyard. So we would just run people into the hot tub and put them in there to heat them up, you know. And then the chalk all got washed off, and, you know, coming around the corner, we didn't, you know, in areas we didn't have volunteers. And so, you know, Mark Montgomery and Dean Harper were, you know, pretty much neck and neck. Mark was a little ahead, I think. And so Mark comes down and goes the wrong way and goes down Beach Hill. And Dean Harper comes down and goes down the right way and goes down Lynch Hill.
Yeah.
And I'll be darned if they don't cross the finish line just about at the same time. And this guy's saying to me, Terry, on the radio, is saying, Terry, I got them coming from both directions, you know. So, and this is the very first event I'm doing. I'm thinking, boy, you know, this is the last one I'm going to have a chance to do. I better get my resume out again and find me another job, you know. But then it was like everybody had such a great time, and the athlete says, "We just can't wait till next year." And I'm thinking, well, I probably won't be here next year. You know? And then we did it the second year, and, you know, we had, instead of 86, we had 200 athletes, and then we had, you know, 400, and then it kept growing. So that first year, you know, was really, and I'd never seen a triathlon before.
Right.
Yeah, so that first year was pretty neat.
But I think what you established with that first race, and when we, you know, we just saw it when in Dubai a couple weeks ago, we had athletes, you know, miss a turn on the bike, and, you know, I hear this stuff all the time. Oh, it's the athlete's responsibility to know the course. You know, you took responsibility at that first race and basically said, "Hey, guys, you're both winners, right? You came from different directions, the rain, the markings, nobody's fault, but you guys are both champions." And, you know, so you took care of people.
At that particular time, we had the highest professional purse in the world.
$500?
It was $1,000 winner take all.
Ooh.
and really what happened is when we were trying to figure out who won, we decided we'd let them both win. But Dean Harper's wife said, "I don't care who wins, but I'm taking the check because we're going to law school and he's going to need the money."
That is funny. Wow. So did you end up giving money to both of them?
No, we just gave it to her.
Oh,
that year.
Let Mark, you know, Montgomery go get his own money.
They didn't care. They were both happy about it.
That's funny.
And it worked out great. We did have a race later that that they made an error on the run, and we did pay everybody all the way down the line what they were, you know, what they were supposed to get.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
it was the year that Todd Jacobs.
Right.
And won the race.
Well, you know what?
You're right. That made a big difference when you have integrity and say, you know, our guys made the mistake, and it was really cool because Tinley was there, and we just got everybody in one of the trailers and sitting around and said, you know, okay, where would if the people didn't get lost, where would you have placed? And the good part is. Oh, I think it was here Andrew McNaughton won. And, you know, they said, Andrew says, well, you know, I would have been first. And the other guy says, I would have been first. I would have, no, he didn't. He agreed that Andrew would have been first. And he says, I would have been second. And one of the Australian guys said, well, I think I would have been fourth. And about six other guys says, no way, you wouldn't have been fourth. You'd have been sixth. He says, oh, okay.
I love it, that, though. Because, you know, the reality is, it's funny. People ask me, say, well, how does a race like Wildflower get, you know, such a great field? And you always do. You always have, you know, like we talked about, all the champions on the steps. But it's not just the champions on the steps. It's how deep the fields always are. And the reason is because they all know they're going to be treated well, right? They're all going to be, everybody is going to get taken care of. And you know, it's nice when a race has a ton of money to pay people and fly them in. But the reality is that if a race is conscientious and cares about the pros and treats them the way they want to be treated, they're coming back. And you always have people coming back.
Yep. Well, Ironman makes it harder and harder all the time.
They drop St. George on you.
Yeah. Well, they drop St. George and then. You know, they've got their whole pro series and stuff and points and all that.
It makes it tough.
But we're doing great. You know, I mean, we've had Julie Moss and Lynn Downing and Nancy Valance and, you know, Donna Peters and Heather Feer and Barbara Lindquist and Heather Goldnick and Natasha Bodman, you know.
Yes.
And on the men we've had, you know, the Molinas and the
Peter
Dean
Reed.
Harpers and the Andrew McNaughtons and the Paul Huddles and the Todd Jacobs and Wolfgang Dietrich and, you know, Cam Whitehoff and everybody else you can think of. Tim DeBoom, you know.
Macca.
And Chris McCormick, he won many times.
Yes.
And Simon Lessing and Terenzo Bazzoni, you know. And
it's course record.
I mean, they're all winners there, and we've got a list of great people that raced that didn't win there.
Exactly. Well, you know what? So, it's one of those races that really helps put people on the map.
Yeah.
Peter Reed, when he won, that put him on the map. When Cameron Whitehoff won, that put him on the map. And the guy most recently, you look at Jesse Thomas, when he came...
Yeah.
He signed up at the last minute. He basically borrowed everything.
We didn't even know who he was.
He comes down to the finish chute, and I think the announcer is like, "We don't even have you on the list. What's your name?" You know, that type of thing. But that's how legends are made. What I love is when he won for the third time, and he basically had this sprint to win it, and he basically broke a bone in his foot to win that race. And didn't race again until last year's Wildflower.
For the fourth time, and he won again.
So, you know, it's interesting how we've seen a lot of that. When Macca won, when Jesse won, when Heather wins. Once they figured it out, it seems like it's very difficult to beat them.
Yeah.
What is it about that? You know, I also look at your race. You talk about the baseball movie Field of Dreams. You've got this perfect venue. Right, where you got water, and then you got this bike ride that, you know, just happens to be 56 miles. It goes around this beautiful lake and is very challenging with nasty grade. And then a run course with a lot of cross country. And it's just one of those things when you first started looking at it, did you have any idea that this was going to be one of the most epic courses ever?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I wish I could take some credit, but I can't take any at all, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we started out with the 100K course that went out through, you know, Fort Hunter League and stuff like that, and then we had issues with the Army, and we decided that wasn't going to work. And, you know, after the first couple years, we understood that people loved to come to this place, and it had something special.
Yeah.
And we're going, well, you know, what happens if we go around the lake? And it just happened to be, turn out almost perfectly to be, you know, at that time, you know, 56 miles. And you know, and then running the trails, the same thing. We had a different trail route that went on some private property, and the private landlords, you know, caused some problems. So we decided we need to get all in the park. So that's when we went out Long Valley and stuff like that. And it just turned out to be, you know, really perfect, you know. So there's a lot of things that go along with it that make it what it is. And, you know, and it just happened to turn out to be one of the hardest,
yes,
you know, half Ironman distances and long course distances, you know, in the world. And then, I mean, we didn't even know it until, you know, you get like guys that been all over, you know, you get the Molinas and
Tinley
and the Wolfgang Dietrich, yep, and Tinleys and those guys that have been all over the world, and they're saying, you know, this is the best course we've ever been on.
Yeah, well, because you look at courses and you look at what makes a course a classic. And what makes, yeah, a course a classic is, you know, obviously a really nice swim. But, you know, the bike ride is legendary. You know, when you start naming parts of, when you know, everybody knows when you say Kauai High to Javi and back, that's legendary in triathlon.
Yeah.
Or you talk about Solar Hill at part of Challenge Roth. Well, when you talk about Nasty Grade, and you talk about, you know, riding, you know, coming down Lynch Hill at the end of the run. And,
yeah,
I mean, there are signature parts of the course that are part of triathlon lore.
Yeah.
And so when you look at this year, and
in the pits of the run and the Long Valley and stuff like that.
Exactly. What I like is sometimes as a race director, as you know, you have to make lemonade. So with the drought we've had, no water in the part of the lake where you normally would swim, but it basically became a quadrathlon. And and from talking to people last year who raced, Jesse Thomas and Heather Jackson and age groupers, what they liked about it was you come out of the water and then you're running basically through the lake, you know, that you used to swim through.
You're running 30 feet below where you used to swim.
Exactly,
know?
Which is pretty awesome.
It's really cool, really.
And you're running a couple of miles, and then you're running into transition, and then you're doing the regular bike ride. And then during the run, probably the part of the run that I think people did not like, right, was you come out of the woods, you've been running along, you're feeling good, and it's like, okay, and then they point you down.
Yep.
And you're dropping down knowing that you're going up. You're going to be going back up. So now you come, rather than doing the down and up, that 2 miles, you come out of the woods because you're running 11 miles because you've already run two. You're coming out of the woods and you're turning left. And that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
So how hard, when you knew that, okay, we're not going to have water for the swim, when you realize that, how long before you went from, oh my God, woe is us, to, all right, let's make lemonade out of this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when we were down low, I mean, we did two things. I just prayed that there would be enough water to get it up back up to Lynch.
Right.
But if it wasn't going to happen, then I knew we were going to have to swim out of Harris Creek.
Right.
So it was like, okay, now how do we make that work? So, you know, over the next couple of weeks, I have to, you know, figure that all in my mind first.
Sure.
And figure out what can work and what won't work and stuff like that. And, you know, we did it 1 year before where we had to swim from Harris Creek. It was a lot higher than it is now. But we had two transition areas for the long course. But, you know, that was very, very difficult. And we didn't have near the number of athletes. So that wasn't an option this year.
Right.
Or this last year.
Yeah.
So the only option was to you know, have the swim at Harris Creek and have the 2 mile run. But that wasn't really, you know, difficult for us either, because we had race directed the Escape from Alcatraz for years.
Yeah.
You know, and you come out of the water there and you run a half mile. So
right, exactly.
We knew how to set up, you know, a swim out transition area and then what it would take to get people, you know, set up to do that and how to move the equipment and all that, you know. And, you know, it's just not a matter of getting the triathletes there. You've got to get the triathletes, you've got to get the equipment, you've got to get some spectators there, And at Lake San Antonio, there's no busing service. So we've got to hire buses out of San Jose to come down and be there the whole weekend. And,
wow,
you know, then figuring out all the logistics of, you know, getting people transported from the transition area or from, you know, Lynch camping area or Harris Creek camping area or Redonda Vista camping area, and try to really make it the same incredible experience as they've always had, you know. And, you know, and then, you know, it's just not just the long course, you know. It's the
mountain bike, too.
Figuring out the Olympic course, yeah, and the mountain bike course, yeah, was, you know, we decided that the mountain bike guys, they can't do a 2 mile run after the swim.
Because their whole race is 2 mile run.
Yeah. So we just took the mountain guys, and we were able, because we had, you know, only less than 1,000 people, we could do the whole transition area down there.
Right.
So we just redid the mountain bike course and actually made it more of an off course than it's been in the past. And we used the long course run course as the mountain bike course, and it worked great, you know. And then they came back to the other transition, and, you know, then we still had to transport their stuff back. But, you know, when we got all done, it was like, it was so incredible to see how everything worked and how incredibly well it worked.
Afterwards, did you get a lot of letters saying, you know what, I didn't know if I would like this, but I did?
Yeah, we did a survey afterwards, you know, and the things that they didn't like was because the water's low, there's more silt and
yes,
stuff in the water,
yep,
so they were a little dirty, so, but we can't do anything like that. I mean, ahead of time, there was all the rumors about, you know, healthy water and no water, and are you going to do it at Nosa Mena, and are you going to move it somewhere else, and how are you, you know, so we had to fight the rumor worms everywhere, you know.
Right.
They were flying everywhere, but you know we knew the water was healthy because we continue to have it tested.
Sure,
and we knew that it was, you know, not perfectly clean, but good. You know, it still had the sediment, you know, right off the shoreline and stuff like that. But when you get out a little ways, still a little bit of an issue for people, but you know, it's a triathlon and they're supposed to be tough people, so. You know, we hope that it didn't make that much of a difference. So, you know, and we were doing everything we can to just have an event.
Exactly. So this year, plans similar in terms of the courses?
Yeah, this year we're going to run the operation the same as it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're making some tweaks on it because we found out we can take more. Like last year, we didn't really want to take spectators down to the swim start because we didn't know if we were going to have enough room on the buses for the athletes, much less the spectators.
Yeah.
So we found out, you know, we can take spectators down there too. So we'll make a little more arrangements for spectators to be able to be down there during the swim and then get them back to Lynch area for the rest of the race and stuff. And so, you know, little tweaks, but not big ones, you know. And we're still, you know, praying for 30 days of rain so we can be back at Lynch.
What?
I don't want 40 because I hear that covers too much.
Yeah,
ground.
No, exactly. So what is the biggest challenge of putting on, you know, a lot of people put on a race. They put on a 5K, a 10K, or a triathlon. You're putting on two races on Saturday and another race on Sunday. And a festival, right? You've got the music, everything else. Biggest challenge of basically you're going for, what, 72, 96 straight hours?
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest challenge is, you know, we're just not putting on a race. We're building a city.
That's a great line.
You know, because we are. We're building a city. The weekend before, there may be 100 people out there. On race weekend, we could have, you know, almost 30,000 people out there. So we have to build a city for 30,000 people. So, you know, building the medical, making sure all the restrooms and all that's taken care of, working with the park to make sure all the campgrounds and all that are taken care of. The transportation plan is incredible because we do have to get buses from somewhere else, and then we have to have shuttles to go everywhere. you know, we have a, you know, an 80-person team that just does radios, you know, the ham radio operators around the course and stuff like that. We've got to get 1,300 Cal Poly volunteer students from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo out to the lake, and then we have to really mainly take care of them for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because they come out on Friday, stay all night Friday night, work on Saturday, stay Saturday night, work on Sunday, and then go home. So we've got to feed them, have a camping area for them, have entertainment for them, take care of them, and do all that too. So those are the major things. And then we build a festival area. You know, then we've got 100 elite athletes we're taking care of and sponsors, and you know, we have to build a complete a hospitality area, and there's not many facilities out there, so you know, we do all our cooking and all the food prep and everything, you know, right on site there with our crews and stuff for that. And you know, then we have to get the, you know, all our expo vendors, you know, we have almost 100 expo vendors, and getting them all lined up and set up, and then they have to have camping and electricity and power and water, and you know, it's basically, like I said, building the whole city, you know, and we've got to have, you know, rangers. We make arrangements for, you know, medical helicopters because we're forced so far away, highway patrol, you know, so it's basically, you know, like setting up a whole city.
What I love, I remember, and we forget that the Sunday race is, you know, the Olympic race, but that's the huge collegiate race. You got all the colleges coming in from all over the country.
Yeah. In fact, that was the very first collegiate national championship for USAT.
Right.
You know, and we did them there for 10 years, and then they moved them around. But we still do the Wildflower Collegiate Championships, and we'll have, you know, 400 to 500, you know, collegiate triathletes competing for, you know, what I think is the collegiate championship.
Right.
You know,
well,
for the sport.
And I think the athletes feel that way too.
Yeah.
So when you look back over 33 years, what do you feel that the legacy is of Wildflower?
I really, you know, for me, the whole legacy is just bringing, you know, people and families together, families, friends, and people together for a lifestyle experience, because that's what we see. It's not a race. This is a way of life for people.
Yeah.
And a lifetime experience. And for us, it's the memories that people make there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about what's going on, it's the memories. We just finished a book with all the stories in it from the last 10 years of, you know, from the people.
Right.
You know, and we really believe that it's the number one people race triathlon in the world, you know, because we'll have, you know, we'll have children, we'll have parents, we'll have grandparents, we might even have great-grandparents all there, you know. And they used to come in little tents, and now they come in 50-foot motorhomes, and and it's just a family atmosphere, and it's just incredible the energy that happens on that weekend at that particular location. I've just never seen it anywhere else.
You know, the couple of the memories I have from Wildflower over the years, I remember there was one year where, and I can't remember exactly on the course, but somebody's bike seat came off, and they were creative enough to use a water bottle, I think. They like strapped, remember that? They strapped a water bottle on and sat on that for the rest of the bike ride. And the other one was one of the gals, and I forget her name, who I think won the collegiate division at least once and maybe twice and went on to be a pro. But I think her dad rented a helicopter and like followed her.
Jeanne.
Yes, right, Jeanne Crisman. Crisman.
Yeah.
Her dad followed her during Wildflower in a helicopter.
I know.
That was like the best.
Yeah. And she won it 2 years, and then she became a pro. And
yeah.
I talked to her, I think, last year. And, you know, she's a dentist now. And
I love that.
You know, she was just an incredible person, you know.
Isn't that funny?
And I think that's the thing that I enjoy the most out of it, is just the incredible people involved in the sport, you know. I think about, you know, you and Julie and Scott and Jeanne and, you know, all the these and Paul and Paula and all these different people, you know, and it just, you know, it. I'll never forget, you know, it used to be that that Jacqueline Shaw.
Yes,
she was like the most incredible, you know, athlete we had for a while, and you know, she would ride her bike from San Diego to Canada.
Yes.
Where she lived, you know.
Yeah.
You know, or she'd be in her little old Volkswagen, coming to the Wildflower, going somewhere else. And that's when I lived in King City, you know, she'd just stop and she would, you know, put her tin on my lawn and stay outside. And, you know, we'd do a lot of stuff together. And, you know, and then, you know, the Brazilians would come from Brazil and they would stay with us for 3 or 4 weeks, it seemed like, you know. And so it was, you know, all those things and just, you know, and it's been for me and my family, you know, my daughter Colleen, you know, she was 10 years old when we had the race, and she ended up being a volunteer out on the Harris Creek out there all by herself for hours in the rain, you know. And then my son Elliot was 6, and we had him in another spot with another kid, you know. And, you know, and my mom used to make potato salad for us. And, you know, my brother Chris for years never missed a race, you know. Anywhere we went, he was part of our team, you know. And Paul Ashenbrenner out there with the Energizer Bunny
yes.
on the...
Yeah,
on a long course bike, even if it's 90 degrees out there, you know.
I remember seeing
it. And just, you know, just all the different people and all the families and all that, and it just really, you know, makes me proud of what the race has been and what other people have been able to do for it. You know, I can't take very much credit for anything because, you know, it's really been everybody else. It's done so much and worked so hard at it. And I just get to be able to, you know, sort of encourage them and get them to help and talk them into doing something, you know, and
right.
those types of things. So,
love it.
Yeah, you know, I don't see myself as any, you know, incredible marketer or any great vision or anything. You know, it's just, this is what God had happened. And that's the way it is.
I love that you're not putting on a race. You're building a city for 30,000. That puts it totally in perspective. So Wildflower coming up on May 2nd and 3rd. You can go to tricalifornia.com and sign up. You can sign up for the Olympic. You can sign up for the half. You can sign up for the mountain bike. All the races are great. The weekend is special. It is the Woodstock of triathlon.
Or Camp. The triathlon squared.
Exactly.
Where you do the long course on Saturday and the Olympic on Sunday. We have about 100 people doing that now.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God. Those are tough people.
Yep.
I love that. Hey, Terry, thanks, as always, for taking so much time to chat about one of our favorite events. We'll see
There's
you.
Nobody I would rather talk to than you. You're just great. So.
Terry Davis has been our guest again. We are brought to you by the very best in women's activewear. That's Core Sports. Head Sweats, Function Smart Physical Therapy with Gino Cinco. And check out all of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.